Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always on the main Inside the Ropes podcast by Sondra Ruth Wesseldyke Reinstein from Grand Rapids, Michigan in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world. Hi Sondra, how are you?
The greatest country in the world. I have a few issues with my country at this point, but I'm doing okay. There's nothing really too exciting to report. I'm getting really excited for StarCast next week. Like there's a lot happening, I suppose, but nothing that's like that exciting for podcasting.
Well, I mean, we've got this Sunday, we've got Money in the Bank coming up. So we're going to discuss that show on Monday on Patreon.
I genuinely keep forgetting that's this Sunday. Like, it's just so not at the forefront of my mind. Like, I love wrestling and wrestling's my favorite. And I've watched some really awesome wrestling in the past few days. And WWE has just not been exactly at the top of my list, I suppose.
I mean, I can't argue with you. It's not exactly the best right now. I'm hoping that Money in the Bank is going to be one of those shows that going into it, we're not very excited, but it somehow manages to pull something out of the bag.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's good to go in with low expectations.
I like to go into most sexual experiences that way.
You know, it's easier to not be disappointed. But it's kind of, I don't know, I'm at a point with WWE right now where it just kind of feels like nothing matters, and that's sad, right? Because then, like, I watch other things, and it's so good. Like, I watch Shikara's Infinite Gauntlet, and I, like, cry, because they're telling so many good stories, and I watch Uncharted Territory from Beyond, which is awesome, and more people should be watching it, because there's really, really great wrestling. Like, they do live shows every Wednesday night, not that many people know about it, but, like, there are alternatives out there.
There are. We should mention, actually, that Ric Flair has been hospitalized, and at the beginning of the whole situation, it seemed quite bad because TMZ had reported that he was hospitalized for something that was very serious, but apparently Conrad Thompson has just said in a conference call that it's not grave or serious. It is a planned medical procedure that Flair wants to have before Vegas. So apparently he's okay. That's good.
That's good to hear. Because I saw that. I mean, leave it to TMZ. Of course, they're going to sensationalize everything, right? Because that's TMZ. That's what they do. But they made it sound very, very alarming in the article that I saw. So I'm glad that he's okay.
So that's kind of one of the stories. What I will say is something that I think Finn and I will probably cover tomorrow, just because it's more of a kind of analytics thing than what you and I would do, is there is the news that WWE is moving to BT Sports in the UK, leaving Sky Sports after 30 years. There's a lot to the story, a lot to it. It's very interesting. So tomorrow, Finn and I can dissect it a little bit, and you know, he'll know more about the inner workings of the Sky WWE relationship than I do. I know more about the end of the relationship, but
I know very little because I'm not from there. So it's probably a better discussion for you and Finn to have. But that is interesting news. I mean, I know that they've been on Sky forever. So that seems like a big thing.
I mean, one of the things that everybody's kind of speculating about is, you know, look, the last time Sky signed a deal was a 5-year deal for 2014 to 2019 that they signed, I think, late 2013. And I can't say everything, but what I can say is that Sky definitely were led to believe that the inception of the network would not be hugely detrimental to what they do with WWE, which obviously is not the case, you know, because
Sky aired the pay-per-views as well, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I just don't know. I don't know the numbers, but I don't think that the pay-per-views did very well. after like 2015, 2016, because I can't remember exactly when it was the UK got the network officially. I think we got it within a year of it coming out.
Didn't you get it? Because we got it in February, and I want to say you guys got it like, was it in the fall?
Is December ringing a bell for some reason? I don't know.
That could be. I was thinking like December or January.
So yeah, because I mean, a lot of us got it like through just getting the American.
Well, because you guys all got it when we got it, essentially. Like a bunch of people did, but yeah. So I'm trying to remember.
I think a lot of it's got to do with the fact that, you know, they weren't really making a lot of pay per view money from it. Raw and SmackDown do not do great in the ratings anymore. So I mean, it's not hugely shocking. It's shocking from the extent of Sky, and then we're partners for 30 years. But tomorrow Finn and I'll get into more of the kind of details of BT Sports. What is their reach? Are they a good partner to go with? Is it going to be better or worse for WWE? What does it mean for you if you live in the UK? I'm going to try and sit down tonight and work out some prices of what it's going to cost for people, because I think if you have like Virgin Media as opposed to Sky, then BT is included as part of your channels. Whereas if you have Sky, you need to pay separately to get BT. But I know a lot of people have got Sky Sports purely for WWE, and Sky Sports is quite an expensive package. So I wonder how many people are going to let go of Sky Sports after WWE's not on there anymore. So
yeah.
But I guess the big news that is sweeping the wrestling world is, of course, the news that AEW launched yesterday at the upfronts in New York, where they told us that AEW has signed a deal with Warner Media. They are going to be starting a weekly TV show this fall on TNT, home of formerly WCW. They had a big AEW logo with fire behind it. There's a lot to it, but I guess just on the surface of it, what do you make of the story? Because you weren't watching wrestling when TNT had wrestling before, but you've been watching when it's really only been WWE in town on a national platform. I was going to ask you this first. If you live in the States, was mm-hmm. Impact big in the States in terms of when it was on Spike and stuff like that? Did you see a lot about it? What was the reach of that when Impact were on Spike?
I don't remember seeing much about it when Impact was on Spike. But again, like, I was barely aware of WWE before 2010. Like, I knew vaguely that they existed, but it's just not really part of my world. And because I haven't had cable in so long, there's not really an opportunity for me personally to watch it. I think now, I don't know, like, it seems like I would see ads for Impact every once in a while, but I don't remember it being a huge deal. Like, WWE was always the wrestling, and I didn't really realize that there was like another company. It never felt like there was, I don't know, like Impact never felt like it had that much national exposure. It did have some, I know. But yeah, it was never really all that like forefront to me. But I'm also kind of the worst person to ask, because I'm not that aware of pop culture in general. Because I don't have cable, and so I kind of like watch what I watch. But I mean, WWE has definitely always had more reach. And yeah, so I guess I wasn't really that aware of Impact before I started watching wrestling and getting like properly into it. Because I would listen to you and Robert, and you would talk about Impact. And so that's kind of how I figured out it existed more.
Well, you know, crackcore clear and AJ Styles do pull you in.
It's true.
But what do you make of AEW going to TNT? Does it seem like a big deal? Do you think that they're going to be successful? And the other element, I guess, I want to ask you about was, I saw something yesterday that I hadn't really thought of about, you know, they did say that it's going to be a kind of sports-based product a lot, mm-hmm. Rather than be more of a sports entertainment, which is what WWE brand themselves as. Do you think that that's going to hurt the female viewership? I mean, they are really touting a women's division, and women are a focal point of the promotion of AEW, but what do you make of the way they're branding it, the way they're putting it out there, them going to TNT, the whole shebang?
I mean, I love the fact that they're going to TNT. I think this announcement was big. I think, you know, we'd been talking for a while. Everyone kind of expected them to turn up on one of the Turner stations, whether it was TNT or TBS. Turns out it's going to be TNT, which is great. It's a big channel. It's available to a lot of people if you have cable in any sort of package. TNT is normally included, at least in this area where I am. So it's going to have a pretty big reach, as much as USA, I would say. if not more. I think USA is included in most like basic packages as well, but I'm not really sure. I haven't had cable for a long time, but yeah, it's huge. Like, this is a really big deal for them, and to get signed to TNT, which is a, you know, a very well known channel, it feels big. And the fact that it is the former home of Nitro, you know, they know that it's the former home of Nitro, and putting that AEW logo up with all the fire behind it, that's not an accident. Like, that's very intentional to be like, hey, TNT, look, fire and wrestling go together like they did before. So yeah, I mean, the news feels huge. I think they have a chance to succeed. It's really hard to say before we know how they're going to execute all the things in their press release. Like, one of the things that kind of stuck out to me when I read the press release yesterday was that they're going to be introducing statistics to wrestling for the first time ever, right? And I'm looking at Chikara's point system and going, for the first time ever, really? But I think there's the possibility that that's going to be really cool, like tracking wins and losses and making matches matter so that you don't get endless matches for momentum the way we have in WWE a lot of times, right? I would like for wins and losses to matter. I would like for them to mean something. It could also get very convoluted, and if they're focused more on statistics than on, you know, organic storytelling and character development, then that's not going to be ideal. But if they, you know, if they choose to go the way of like a point system or, you know, winning matches to get title matches or that kind of thing, then I think that has absolute merit. I don't think a sports-based presentation is going to turn away female viewers if it's like, I don't know how hardcore they're going to go with a sports-based presentation. Like, I don't want it to feel just like UFC. I want there to be stories. I want there to be, you know, vignettes and character development and all that kind of stuff. Like, that should be present. But what I'm guessing is that they're going to lean more into the wrestling matches mattering a little bit more than, say, they do in WWE. And they want to brand themselves as different, right? Like, they want to stand out from WWE. So there are a lot of buzzwords in that press release that are basically like, we know that this is what's being done right now and people don't like it. Like, people don't like a lot of the soapy drama and the, you know, terrible skits and the, you know, really awful storytelling that WWE has been failing on a lot. They want it to be more cohesive and they want it to be more sports based so that it draws in a different type of wrestling audience, people who are more interested in matches and match quality and that kind of thing. I don't think they should go too far in that direction, because I think there are a lot of, you know, more casual viewers, or viewers like, you know, you, for instance, who you're more interested in the stories and the characters and stuff than the actual match quality. And when the match quality tells the story, then, you know, that's kind of the perfect mix of everything. But I mean, I think they have a chance to succeed. I hope they do. One of my friends on Facebook was put out a thing, and he wasn't even being snarky, which is rare for him, but he was like, I stopped watching wrestling a long time ago because everything seemed formulaic and everything seemed, you know, just generic and the same, and the matches were not grabbing me. Is this going to be something that brings me back in as a viewer? Like, what about this is going to be different? And I think the reason AEW has a chance is because they've, you know, they've done well to bring in a couple big names to attract mass audiences, right? Like, if they have Chris Jericho involved in the show and they have Dustin Rhodes involved in the show, they have Cody Rhodes involved in the show. Those are names people know. But they've also assembled such a diverse roster and such a diverse cast of characters that I don't think it's going to feel formulaic if they do it right. Because they have a Sonny Kiss and a Nyla Rose and all the guys from OWE who are incredible. And like, we don't see wrestling like that on a national television scale, right? Like, you don't see crazy acrobatic flippy shit that the OWE guys are going to do. And if they mix that with, you know, the storytelling that has been prevalent through Being the Elite, and if they mix that with, you know, all of the, like, if they put a focus on women's wrestling, then that's going to help. Like, that's going to draw in female viewers and male viewers who just want to see really good wrestling because the wrestlers they have hired are great. So I guess that's all a long-winded way to say that I'm really excited about it, and I think they have a chance to succeed, and I hope they do, and it's just going to depend on how things end up manifesting.
I mean, it's going to be a long process, but the thing is, like, I feel like there's a weird thing right now where there's a kind of case of, like, you know, more female viewers have come in over the last kind of 5 or 6 years, but I do think that I think there's a way to get the sports audience, get I mean, because women watch sports, shocking.
True.
It's a statistic, right?
Like, it's a real thing.
It is
happens.
A real thing, as much as some women would not like to believe that's the case. But like, women watch sports, but also, like, if something's good, it kind of hits for everybody, right? Like, mm-hmm. If WWE's doing something really good, then it'll hit for the women who watch Total Divas, the boyfriend who watches wrestling, like, it'll hit for a majority of different people. The thing that I was thinking about, which is kind of a different part of it, is that, like, them being on TNT, it's like there's an audience. We're watching Retro Raw right now, but like 6 months ago when we were watching Retro Raw, there was like 6 million watching Raw and 5 million watching Nitro. So that was like 5 million people who used to watch wrestling on TNT. Like, that used to be what they did.
Yeah.
So there is, like, I'm not saying that if they do it, there's going to be 5 million people. But I do think that there's an element of, well, I mean, if there was that many people watching it before, then there are people out there who used to watch, and they didn't want to watch WWE. And, you know, we'll get to when we do the Invasion thing. If I had been a WCW fan only and nothing else, if I'd turned on WWF, there's no way I would have liked it. I'd have been like, okay, so you guys are just basically raping the brand that I like. That's all you're doing. You're mm-hmm. saying that you guys are better than it. You're not giving me anything that is kind of authentic to what I like in wrestling. You're just doing your own shtick, you know? And when I watched All In September, I saw elements of the old... I saw elements of WCW, I saw elements of WWF, I saw a lot of different elements. And I feel like that's what they're going to bring to this. I don't think it's going to be a purely sports presentation, because I think you're going to get... I think you're going to get, like, UFC elements. You're going to get... You are going to get sports elements in it, but you're also going to get stuff like... Look, they're signing Joey Ryan.
Yeah.
This is not going to be purely... I think that if they... I think the biggest way they can be successful is if they kind of go with some of the approach that Eric Bischoff took in the early days of Nitro, which was, right, let's have loads of cruiserweights in there, let's have these Mexican wrestlers who nobody sees on TV, let's have you know, all the young guys that people are clamoring for, let's bring in some of the old guys who work, you know, like Jericho. I mean, I don't want to call him an old guy, but like Jericho is someone who, when he was in WWE, did that feud with Kevin Owens, which was like a really big hit, and he was like the second match in WrestleMania. Cody and Dustin was supposed to be a match that WWE didn't feel was part of what their show should be. I think Cody and Dustin might steal the show in Vegas. I think they've got a shot at that. So they've got a lot of different elements that I hope they bring into the show in October.
If they treat it like a variety show, because they have such a range of characters, right? And it's not to say that WWE doesn't have on their roster a range of characters if they let people be them, but because everything feels so... like micromanaged in WWE, and everyone has to kind of adapt to WWE style, then everyone does feel a little bit more formulaic and the same, and all the promos sound the same because they're all written by the same people. And one of the things in the AEW press release was like, we are going to let wrestlers be them. We are going to give people freedom. We are going to give them, you know, creativity to express themselves. And I mean, a lot of that is just lips. It could just be lip service, you know, like you don't know until the show airs. So I don't want to be like, AEW is going to bring balance back to the world of wrestling and it's going to save everything and fix the world. I don't know that to be true, but I think that they have a good start. And if they're letting these wrestlers and characters, and, you know, I mean, the Jacksons came up with being the Elite, and that, like, they're the creative minds behind that. So, like, they know how to tell stories and they know how to do stuff like that. It's going to be harder to execute on a weekly basis, but I don't know. I feel like they have a chance. And there are so many different wrestlers that they've signed that I'm excited for people to see on a national stage. Like, I'm really excited for some of these people to become big stars. And I think that's where, like, if AEW can actually make people have notoriety and make names for themselves and make big stars the way WWE isn't, then I think that's going to do them really well too.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something different. Because they're probably not going to just like get on TV and just get 2 million viewers straight away. They're going to have to work towards it. But they do have name value. So there's also more information about the deal that's come out as well today, which is that they are not being paid money. Like WWE are paid like a fee for Raw and SmackDown. What this is that they are being given a guaranteed amount of money for ad revenue, but if they get more ads, then the revenue is bigger. So it's like a split of ad revenue, and also they're getting their production paid for them. So like, it's a big thing for the station to pay for production. That's like that's like 30 million a year that they're going to pay to do the production. So, and then, I mean, I guess to kind of correlate that in something else. I was listening to Meltzer earlier talk about how the Raws that we're watching in 1999, USA didn't pay for production at that point. So the money that USA were giving WWE was probably like covering production for Raw, but it wasn't, they weren't making a ton of money on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they then went on to go move to TNN in 2000. But the deal's a pretty good deal for the deal's a pretty good deal for the one that they've actually been able to get, given that they are not, you know, WCW used to be part of Turner, which is why they got their production paid for them and all that kind of stuff. But this is a new startup who've come up and have got this out of the gate. So it's a pretty good deal.
It's a really big deal. And one of the things I am wondering about is when they are on TNT, and if TNT is paying for production costs, what kind of limitations is that going to put on AEW? Like, are they going to find the same kind of, I don't know, creative shackles that WWE has with USA and NBC and all of whoever owns those networks? Like, they face a lot of pressure from networks to do certain types of programming and not have certain types of things on their programming. And I'm curious if AEW is going to face that same thing, because network pressure is a real thing, right? Like, if you're on a televised wrestling show, you can't run it the way that you would run a show that is just on your own streaming platform. Like, you have different requirements and you have different masters to serve. So I'm curious to know how network pressures are going to affect AEW, and if, you know, creatively, if that's going to be a problem for them, or if they're going to be able to work together. I think it's good that, you know, this time Turner isn't like owning part of AEW. They're just a broadcast partner this time, right? Because that was kind of what went wrong with WCW. A lot of, like, Turner didn't want to have wrestling anymore and da, 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 da. Like, there's all sorts of stuff that's been written about that. But I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things to just bring up, because, like, I am really excited about AEW and I'm like super, super looking forward to it. But I think it's naive to think that they're just going to be able to do whatever they want when they're on a major television network. That network is also going to have some say in what goes on television.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that AEW are going to be doing, because you don't really need to have like over 18 language or anything like that on the show. You can do stuff and bleep it out, and there's ways around it. So
I'm curious more about stuff like intergender wrestling, because that seems to be something that AEW is okay with, but is the network going to be okay with it?
And I mean, I think that's one of those things that you kind of have to, if the network don't want to do it, then you can't do it. And that's just the end. Because look, you can't go on TNT and like say, we're going to do what we want anyway. But I don't know if TNT are going to be one. I think as long as TNT are in the loop about it, and if they kind of say, look, you know, here's what we want to do. I don't think you're ever going to see, like, women getting hit in the head with chairs and stuff like that. But I think
because you shouldn't see anyone getting hit in the head with chairs.
No, but I think, I would imagine that if you do see intergender wrestling, it would probably be more, like, I'm trying to give an example, like a kind of Candice LeRae when she would do it, as opposed to, I don't think you're going to see...
When she got thumbtacks in her mouth and kicked in the face?
Well, I don't watch that kind of wrestling, so that's more your question than me. But, like, she's done more mainstream stuff when she's done intergender wrestling, which is what I was trying to infer. But you're not going to see the other shit that you were talking about, because that's not going to happen on a network, and nor should it happen on a network. So they're going to have to be clever about it. So if they want to do intergender wrestling, then they have to do it in a way that plays to, you know, TNT's 90 million homes. You need to put on a show that's for a network that has 90 million homes, not for like a crowd of 200 people in CZW or whatever that would be. So they're gonna have to elevate what they do. But I don't have any like concerns about them. I don't think they're gonna. There's no part of me that's really worried for them. I'm curious to see what other names come into the fray, because now that they're on TNT, now that it's a big deal, now that there's money involved and stuff. I mean, are we gonna see Jon Moxley come in? It certainly seems from the video that he put on his Twitter that, you know, he was escaping the prison and all that sort of stuff, that may be where he would end up.
I mean, he would be someone that seems like he would fit really well in that type of environment, right? Like, WWE and he just never really clicked. And you don't want AEW to be the company that takes all the WWE cast-offs, right? Like, you don't want them just taking everybody who gets released or requests their release, because you don't want it to just become WWE light and like they have to make their name based on WWE talent. But Jon Moxley is someone who I don't know. I think he could be an asset. Like, I was never the biggest Dean Ambrose fan, but John Moxley having more creative freedom, I think could be a great thing for them. And they do need probably a few more recognizable names to bring in, like, casual viewers who are only familiar with WWE. There needs to be a balance there.
And I think there will be. And so, I mean, I guess they're gonna either be on Tuesday or Wednesday nights in the States. That's the night they're going to be on. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. Anything else, any other aspects of it you want to talk about or want to bring up?
I think that's about it. I did watch Being the Elite yesterday, and it was pretty funny. They had this whole opening skit about a guy wanting to be released from AEW, and they were like, no, we're not going to grant you release. That's not going to happen. And it was just completely taking the piss out of WWE, and it made me laugh.
I actually saw that episode. It was pretty funny. So they've signed Angelico and Jack Evans. They're going to be.
Oh yeah, they're having Best Friends versus Angelico and Jack Evans is going to be at Double or Nothing, and I'm so excited.
And then there's also the six women tag involving Aja Kong and some Japanese women who I've not heard of, but I've heard are pretty great. That was Kenny Omega, who's apparently kind of facilitated that because he wanted it to be a sort of really kick-ass women's match on the show.
Yeah, so it looks like Double or Nothing is shaping up to be an incredible show. Like, an incredible show. I'm so excited. What do you make of the pay-per-view cost? I don't think we've talked about this because I've seen a lot of people complaining that it's going to cost like $50 or $60 here in the States, and it's a lot.
It's a risky move, but I mean, WWE have so undervalued the cost of their pay-per-views that I feel like it's a risk to take at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of people want to see Double or Nothing. It all depends on how many people buy it. I mean, I think if you buy a WWE pay-per-view now and it's not on the network, it is like $50. But then WWE have made so much money that they can now, they can do that. So, I mean, because if you're in the UK, it's the $14.95. If you're in the US, is it 50? Is that what it is?
I think it's 50.
50, okay.
So on Bleacher Report Live, I think it's 50, yeah.
Okay, and then I think that I read today that Fight TV are going to be doing the international stream if you're not in the US, the UK, or Canada.
Okay.
So that's...
Because I was surprised it wasn't going to be on Fight here in the US, just because I'm used to everything being on Fight here in the US, but I guess they're really pushing the Bleacher Report Live, which makes sense because Turner owns Bleacher Report.
Well, I think that Turner owns Bleacher Report, so that's gonna mean that it's gonna be on there. So, but I think if you're like Australia or whatever, Fight's the place that you're gonna be able to get it. But yeah, they're charging $40 on Fight, $50 on pay per view. It's a risky move, but if you're going in kind of saying this is what our product's worth, and then you deliver, then more power to them. UFC charge that for their pay per views.
They do. And the thing is, if you get a group of people together to watch it and everyone chips in a tenner, then it's not really that bad, right? Like, just get a group of friends and have a party for Double or Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. You should do that. So, yeah, that's kind of most of the stuff on the AEW thing. Let's talk about the Lars Sullivan situation that came out last week. He had said a lot of stuff on bodybuilding forums, I think it was, about eight or nine years ago. He said things that were racist, homophobic. I'm not really going to go into the stuff that he said, but he said a lot of stuff.
It was bad.
So WWE apparently knew about it about a year ago and made the decision to kind of not go anywhere with it. And then when it came out recently, some fans basically went to sponsors and it escalated. So now they fined him $100,000 for this. And he apparently, Titus O'Neil tweeted it and said he's went to him and a few other people and apologized and sort of said that he apparently seems to be sincere in the fact that he is apologetic about what he's said in the past. So I guess, what do you make about what Lars has said? What do you make about the punishment? And generally, like, is it something that should now be forgiven? Is it something that should be held against him? Like, where do you kind of sit on that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's really tricky because it's the kind of thing that makes me really glad I didn't have social media back when I was younger, because I'm sure if anyone looked at some of the comments I made when I was like, you know, 15 or 18 or whatever, like I said a lot of dumb shit because that's what you do. Like when you're younger, you say a lot of dumb shit. The stuff he said was very bad. Like, a lot of the comments and stuff that he was making were very misogynistic. They were very racist. They were very homophobic. They were bad. And it is unfortunate that he held those views in the past. He did put out an apology. I forget when he put out. Was that recently that he put out the official apology, or was that a year ago when all this first surfaced? Because I remember this stuff coming up before in the news cycle. And
I'm,
I remember
I'm googling his apology. I think it was recently, but yeah, I'm sure the apology was recently.
Okay, because he did put out an apology for it, and it wasn't a bullshit like, I am sorry that this got found or anything like that. It was, there is no excuse for what I said. That is unacceptable behavior.
Yeah, he said it last week, and he said, there is no excuse for the inappropriate remarks I made years ago. They do not reflect my personal beliefs nor who I am today, and I apologize to anyone who is offended.
Yes. And I think that that is a good apology to put out. I do. It's really tough because I think we live in an age where, you know, typing things into social media and having them on Twitter or message boards or whatever, that makes those statements more permanent than if you just say them out loud, and they can always be found, right? Like, I mean, someone found a Johnny Gargano tweet that was pretty horrendous from years and years and years ago. Like, Ty Dillinger has had stuff like rape jokes and whatnot on his Twitter years ago. And that stuff just stays. It's like there is a permanent record now, right? I understand why WWE felt they had to take action against him, but I mean, it also seems kind of ridiculous that they're digging up stuff from 9 years ago and then punishing someone for it when it's before he worked for the company. Like, something David McCutcheon said on the Facebook community was that this is WWE's fault for not thoroughly vetting him, right? Like, if they would have known about this before they hired him, they probably wouldn't have hired him, because it's just a dangerous situation. Like, remember when Zara got fired for having Nazi imagery on her social media? And she wasn't saying that she was a Nazi, but it was like, I don't know, she's like admiring imagery or something like that. Like, it's a dangerous precedent to set, I think, because, and $100,000 is a lot of money. Like, it's a lot of money. So I don't know, like, I feel like action should be taken for these types of comments, but it's also like, I don't like this culture of digging up stuff from the past and then punishing people for it and then assuming that they can never change. Like, if someone has apologized and seems to be a good person, and the fact that he has talked to people in the locker room personally, I think is good, because I think he should. Like, I think he should apologize to people and say, look, this isn't who I am. I said a lot of dumb shit. Like, I think he needs to work to foster those relationships with people in the locker room, because I think there are going to be a lot of people in the locker room who aren't going to be happy to work with him if, you know, if they believe that that's where he is as a person. I don't know. It's tricky. I understand them taking disciplinary action. $100,000 seems like a lot of money. And I know some people online are like, it's not enough, he shouldn't have a job. And some people online are like, he shouldn't be fined. This isn't, you know, this is from years ago, and I'm not even sure where I sit on it, because it's just, the whole thing just feels so ugly, like digging up stuff from people's past and not allowing them to change. Like, I guess that's kind of my thing, is I want to see change and growth from people, and people need to be allowed to have made mistakes and move past them. I don't know. Where do you sit on it?
It's hard. Like, I know where I stand, but it's very hard to word it without being offensive, because, you know, we need to make sure that we word everything the complete correct way. Otherwise, we're monsters. I hate this. I really hate it. Like, what he said is awful. Like, it really is awful. But I think fining him $100,000 is kind of disgusting. Like, I don't like it. I feel like, because the thing is, Lars Sullivan, where he is in his career, probably doesn't earn. I would be surprised if he's on $200,000. Maybe that.
Right.
So when you take in road expenses, this is basically about a year's salary for something he did 9 years ago before he was hired. He is kind of taking the heat here. Now, this is not me saying I agree with what he said. I do not agree with what he said. There's ways to feel both ways. I don't agree with what he said, but at the same time, I think that these vultures are coming in, because I guarantee you, and if you think that you're different to it, I just don't believe you. If all of us were recorded of everything we've ever said at any point in our lives, I guarantee you there's stuff that could make us look terrible. Maybe not as bad as Lars, right? Maybe not as bad as what he said. But
and he did intentionally go on these forums to troll and make these points.
Yeah, he did. But at the same time, look, I saw a thing yesterday that somebody brought up, Johnny Gargano, right? Johnny mm-hmm. Gargano apparently made a transphobic comment on Twitter 10 years ago or 9 years ago, where he basically said, as a joke, if they still have a penis, they're a guy, right? Stupid comment. And now if we examine it in 2019, yes, it is not a good comment. It was 9 fucking years ago on a tweet. Why should Johnny Gargano, or the guy behind Johnny Gargano, be held to account on something that he wrote 9 years ago that he probably meant as a joke? And if he didn't, I'm sure he's been educated enough in the last 9 years that he doesn't think that way anymore. But now what happens is people are who have no life are going through old Twitter accounts and stuff for like 9 years to try and find dirt on people. And it's just so exhausting. And the worst part of the whole thing is that what Lars Sullivan did is bad. It is on the badder scale of stuff that people have said. But at the same time, it doesn't sit right with me. And this has nothing to do with me liking Hulk Hogan, the performer. But Hulk Hogan, when he said the shit that he said, was quite rightly excommunicated for years, right? Because of what he did. He had money taken away from him. He had a job taken away from him. Those are all things I can't argue with you doing, because the tapes came out. It was public. You kind of have to die by the sword on what you said, even if you are apologetic or whatever. The problem for me is that the Ultimate Warrior is a fucking cretin of a human being, or was. He said stuff worse than both of them combined, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and he has an award named after him.
He's lauded as this hero. That's the other thing about it, is that there's such a double standard, right? Like, they're only really finding Lars Sullivan and making an example out of him because people went to sponsors over what he said. There are so many other people who've said things that are disgusting who are also on the WWE roster, right? I mean, Lacey Evans put her daughter in blackface. It's not okay. Like, I don't know. It bothers me that it feels like things need to happen so that these types of comments and this type of mentality doesn't pervade in the locker room. Like, I don't want that type of mentality to be there, but this seems like a really, really, really crazy fine. And the Ultimate Warrior is the example that, like, I don't understand why they just continue lauding him. Like, I guess because people haven't gone to the sponsors about that. Like, they were gonna, you know, glorify the Fabulous Moolah by naming a battle royal after her. And then, you know, obviously that got taken away because people were like, no, she's a piece of shit. She does not deserve this. I wish people would do the same about Warrior.
That's the one that bothers me, because I'm not adverse to somebody being punished if they've done something. But also, it's like the Hogan thing. Hogan has said that when he was a public figure, he said it during him being Hulk Hogan. So to me, that he kind of has to be held to a higher standard because of that. Because it wasn't like Terry Bollea in 1979 had said it. It was like Hulk Hogan, or Terry Bollea had said it in like the mid-2000s. When he was already this like cultural icon. That's why he was punished and why he deserved to be punished for what he did. But like Lars Sullivan, you're going back to when the guy was like 21 years old and he's being fined 6 figures for something that he said 8 years ago. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't think it's fair to him. And look, I don't think people care about what's fair to him, and that's fine, because, you know, pitchforks are the new thing. But I just think it's like, if we live in this culture where everybody has to be held to, like, if you make a mistake, you are crucified. When's enough enough? Like, when so people can't make a mistake and learn from it? Like, I just don't get why it's like now if somebody makes a mistake, even if they made the mistake years ago, we get to sit and pass judgment on them and make a decision on how they should be treated now. Because, like, everybody makes mistakes. I've said things before that I have meant as a joke, right? That maybe could be construed as something that it's not. And I know I was joking, and the people who I've said it to know I was joking, but if it was recorded and taken out of context, I could look like somebody. Like, I've used the word faggot before. I could be accused as homophobic. I mean, I'm gay and stuff, but that's not really. But at the same time, there's stuff that I've said that people could be like, oh, he's such a homophobe, because it's out of context. So the whole situation, I know everybody's kind of...
Rhea Ripley had it recently where she said, I think she said faggot on a live stream, like as an insult, just kind of off the top of her head, and realized it because people were like, oh, that's not cool. She put out an apology right away. This was a few weeks ago. Did you see this? I can't remember.
Yeah, because I actually looked it up because she had apologized straight away. And when she apologized, I know that a lot of Australian people, Michael Farah had said it as well, that like that's a very common word in in Glasgow, cunt is a really strong word that we use all the time. And in America, you can't say that word. And faggot seems to be a word that was used in Australia a lot as like a kind of school slang or whatever. So, yeah, like, so she used that and then she apologized straight away. And it's like, I mean, when I read that, I was just like, well, yeah, like that's...
And people were still coming for her. Like, there were still so many people who were like, this is unacceptable. You need to do better. And like, I get it. Like, I get it if people in the queer community were hurt by her language. But at the same time, I guess I just feel like there needs to be room for people to be able to make mistakes. And I think what Lars Sullivan did is different because it was like... it was regular thing that he was signing onto these message boards and trolling and intentionally making these comments. And it wasn't off the, you know, it wasn't offhand. It wasn't one thing that he said offhand. It was like a habit for him to be making these comments and saying awful, awful things about certain groups of people. But like, just in general, I think people need to be allowed to have made mistakes and have been a worse person in the past and learning from it. Like, I just think that needs to happen because now there are so many people just bring him as a complete trash human. And I don't know him. Like, he might be a trash human. I don't know. But he seems to get along pretty well with people on the roster, which is, I don't know.
Well, also, I think the other thing is, like, look, and I don't care what your politics are. Like, if you are a conservative or a left person, if you're Democrat or Republican, whatever you are, I've had this thing the last couple of years where I've really wanted to try and get to know people who have different opinions to me. So, like, I'm friends with some conservatives. I would be a Democrat if I was in America. I don't know if I'm Labour anymore over here because Labour's not really what it used to be, but I'm left, right? I'm a left person. But I realised a couple of years ago when Trump got in that I was like, oh, he got in because everything's fucked. Really, that's the real answer. And people who are on the left are not listening to people on the right and vice versa. There's both sides are not listening. And I think that what's happening is the world and Western civilization specifically... has come so far with a lot of stuff that what's happened is there's now this element, and I think that this situation can kind of be tied in a wee bit of like, now there's people are held to such scrutinized things that I think there's people who maybe aren't like a Trump supporter or an extremist or whatever, who they might make a joke and then they're made to feel by a community or whatever that they are the worst of humans, that they almost just go to the other side because they don't want to feel that they're just awful humans for making a joke. And like, I've seen it happen in pubs and stuff. Like, I've seen people who have made, I saw somebody who made a joke about, so this guy had made a joke to this girl about going to the kitchen, right? And it was very clearly a joke, right? It was not, and she like dressed him down to a point that I actually left the pub 5 minutes later.
Wow.
Because I thought what she did was just so disgusting. Because going, what you should have done there was, as a female who is empowered and all that kind of stuff, you should have taken him aside 5 minutes later and said, hey, by the way, totally get what you're trying to do there, but actually, and educated. But instead, what you did was you tore the guy down, you embarrassed him deliberately, so you could look good. That was your goal there. And I feel like that's the stuff that's happening here with Lars, is like there's people who are just choosing that they, oh, there's a new bandwagon I can get on today. Like, it's like almost people get excited in some ways about, you know, I can now look down on this person for something they did before, rather than going, right, let's look at the situation. He was younger, he trolled, he absolutely should be taken to task for what he said. But can anyone really say that the guy, 8 years later, after, you know, you know, being fined basically a year's wage is a fair thing for what?
Especially when this company is run by a man who has said the N-word on television and who has made plenty of comments himself. Vince McMahon is not like his. If we could go into Vince McMahon's like past comments and things like that, do you think that we wouldn't find the same stuff?
Yeah, he iconifies the Ultimate Warrior, who, if people don't know, let me just fill you in the top three. Warrior, who legally changed his name to Warrior, by the way, because that's a normal thing to do, went around college campuses in the mid-2000s educating people that queering doesn't make the world go round. He said that it was karma that Draws became a cripple. And he said that Bobby Heenan... No, he said that Draws... He called Draws a cripple because Draws had said something about how he wasn't a huge Ultimate Warrior fan. And then he said that Bobby Heenan's cancer was karma and he hoped that it ate him to death. Statue of the Lord.
Yep. Yeah, let's name an award after him and give it to, you know, people who, like, I'm glad that there's a warrior award for, you know, people to win. I thought that that Make-A-Wish lady, Sue Aitchison, was that her name?
Yeah, that's right.
She was lovely this year, and I am glad that she got an award and got to be part of the Hall of Fame ceremony, but can we name it after someone who's not a fucking cretin, please?
And even then, I'm not even saying, the point of this is, because it's a hypocritical thing for me to basically say, let's take the pitchforks to the dead guy. I'm not even saying that's what you should do, but I'm just saying you can't iconify that guy, but then, you know, have all these other people that are kind of being taken to task for stuff that they've done. Like, people make mistakes. Like, it's not like Lars Sullivan is, like, he didn't commit some sort of mass genocide on the world. Do you know what I mean? He was a fucking idiot a long time ago, but they hired him, and they didn't do a proper check, you know, because what was her name? The woman, the female wrestler who was going to go to TNA, she was in TNA, she was going to go to WWE, Havoc, Jessica Havoc, is that her name?
Oh, Jessica Havoc, yep.
And she had, yeah. Like, was it, what were the tweets? Was it homophobic or was it Nazi tweets? It was something that was like, there was something that
I think hers were homophobic.
Oh, homophobic. Okay, so she had homophobic tweets and that. Now, the thing is, the homophobic tweets cost her that job. Now, she did make them, so look, she has to just accept that. But she could have gone, she could have used that to kind of go, listen, I didn't get this job because of this. I'm going to use that now to, you know, go and speak at queer events or something and go, look, I was an idiot, you know, and then use it to build your image up and become a better person or whatever. If you want to, you don't have to. But, like, that's something that you could do. But instead, it's just this whole... I mean, Johnny Gargano made that comment in 2010 about if they still have a penis to a guy. So do we now say that Johnny Gargano is transphobic and trash? Is that where we go with that 9 years later?
Because of one tweet in 2010. That's the mentality that bothers me. That everything that you say is permanent record and that no one can grow and change and move past it. Like, I appreciate the fact that Lars Sullivan put out an apology. I think he should have put out an apology sooner, because I remember this all coming up before, and then just kind of it got out of the news cycle like things do, and I think that they were hoping that it just went away, and then it resurfaced, and someone on Reddit put together a very comprehensive list of things that Lars Sullivan had said, and it didn't go away, and so they had to do something. I don't know. Like, it doesn't really sit right with me to fine someone that much money for something that they did when they weren't even part of the company.
But see if he came up to me and said, look, we're going to fine you 10 grand. We have to do it. You did say the stuff. I'm sure he'd have been like, do you know what? Fair enough. But 100 grand? Like, come on.
It's one of the largest fines in WWE history, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the joint second. The biggest one was 250,000 when Austin walked out in 02. And Batista was fined 100k for blading in a match that he was told not to. So, yeah, it's one of the biggest ones. So,
and I mean, the stuff he said was really, really bad. Like, it was really, really bad. And so I understand them having to do something about this, especially for public face. But I don't know. It seems like a lot to me.
I mean, like, I've heard stories about wrestlers who are, like, legends in WWE who are iconified, who have done things to
yep.
people that are way, like, over the line of a lot of stuff. And it's just, that's what sits kind of uneasy, is you kind of go, oh, it's the, because, like, look, it's not like, when Batista got fined 100 grand, and obviously he didn't do anything of this kind of ilk, so I'm not trying to compare it that way, but, like, Batista getting fined 100 grand was, like, that's, like, 10% of his wage or something.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like, a year of Lars Sullivan's money.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sit right with me, so. But let us know what you think on Twitter, KennyMC1985, SondruthRW, about the whole situation. But one thing that is going on right now that's pretty exciting in WWE is Bray Wyatt and Firefly Funhouse.
I love him so much. I'm so glad that he's our friend, and this is a friendship that will never, ever end.
And the mask, holy shit, that mask is great.
It is, like, it's intense, right? And it's a Tom Savini mask, which is awesome. Like, really, really cool that Tom Savini works with WWE and does these masks and stuff. Like, so cool. I love Bray Wyatt so much. Rambling Rabbit was back this week, too. I was really glad to see that Rambling Rabbit survived being eaten. So much like the Big Boss Man, Rambling Rabbit has survived death. Had a plaster over his face, of course, because, you know, he got eaten by Mercy the Buzzard last week. But he was back. I like this transformation. Like, I don't know if it's necessary to have, like, super dark Bray Wyatt wrestling when he's, like, funhouse Bray Wyatt the other time. But this split personality thing could be super interesting. Like, I really want to see where they go with it. It seems like every week on Firefly Funhouse, they are progressing things, right? Like, they are adding little details and wrinkles to the story and to the world. And, like, when he said yowie wowie in that, like, really creepy voice with the mask on and everything, I was like, oh, this is dark as fuck and I love it.
It was, yeah, I made the mistake of watching the Firefly Funhouse segment first, which was a huge mistake, because it was like, that was the best thing. But it was terrifying. It reminded me of, there was moments in the Batman Begins movie where Killian or Cillian Murphy, whatever his name was, became the Scarecrow. And
yeah.
He would put on the mask and it was like, oh shit! Like, it was scary. So I think it's... I think Bray Wyatt liked a tweet by somebody who had said, "I hope that Bray Wyatt just like goes through the roster like Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street or Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th, and isn't like a regular wrestler." And I've said mm-hmm. this before. That's what I want to see with him. I don't think Bray Wyatt being a regular wrestler adds to him at all. It just doesn't.
No, I don't want to see him be a regular wrestler. I want to see him terrify everyone. I want to see him, I don't know, either like build a cult or kidnap people or be a terrifying force on the show. What I think is so weird about the Firefly Funhouse too, and I've noticed this every week that I've watched Raw and watched it in sequence, the Firefly Funhouse will air, right? And it's brilliant and it's fantastic and it's like my favorite thing. And then they always cut back to the commentary table and they always show Michael Cole, Renee Young, and Corey Graves, and they all just kind of go, well, okay. And then they don't say anything about it. Like, they're not selling it as this interesting thing. They're basically just like, okay, that's a part of the show that we don't want to talk about, which I think is weird. Like, I think that they should be reacting to it. I think they should be terrified of Bray Wyatt. I think they should be like, what is he going to do? What does this mean? Because it almost seems like, okay, we're letting him do his thing and being the best part of Raw every week. But then the commentary isn't bringing it into the world at all. And like, I kind of want to keep it separate from the world because I don't want the poison of Raw to seep into the Firefly Funhouse. But at the same time, like, shouldn't people be reacting to this?
You would think so. You would think they'd be reacting to it. I mean, it's almost one of those things you want to keep it away in its little own universe, because when it comes to the real world, how do you translate it? You know?
I have no idea. Like, I almost don't want to find out. I just want Firefly Funhouse to go on for a while. Like, and it seems like they're progressing more and more, right? Like, I mean, knowing that this happy, fun time Bray Wyatt is like the facade for what he's really been working on, which is this super dark, scary, evil clown, like madman. That's fascinating. And like, he has the hurt and heel gloves. And I don't know, like, I want to find out more about this Bray Wyatt, and I don't want it to have anything to do with Raw for quite a while. But it just seems like it's a disservice to Firefly Funhouse that Michael Cole and Renee Young and Corey Graves are just like, nope, don't talk about it.
It's an interesting approach to take. I was also going to ask you about Nikki Cross was kind of prominent on Raw this week. She had a backstage segment where she ends up getting the replacement for Alexa Bliss in a match with Naomi, Natalia, and who was the fourth lady in that match? I cannot think.
Dana.
Dana Brooke, there you go. And then she ends up being crazy during the match. Has a pretty good showing. What did you make of seeing Nikki on TV again? And what do you make of the kind of story they're trying to tell with her?
I mean, I am happy to see Nikki Cross on TV. I don't think this character shift makes any sense whatsoever. I don't know why she's just normal Nikki backstage when she's been doing vignettes where she's backstage, like, kind of lurking and, you know, the bowels of the building and laughing and wanting to play and all that kind of stuff. For her to be kind of like demure, she almost seemed more like Nikola Glencross at that point, right? Where she's just like, oh, I didn't know that anyone noticed that I was here. You know, I've been here for 4 weeks and no one's really said hi to me and all this stuff. It was like she turned into the evil twin, if you've been watching her YouTube series. So yeah, like that didn't make tons of sense. And then she was like crazy again in the ring, which I mean, I love Crazy Nikki. I think Crazy Nikki is great. And I think that she wrestles very, very well as that character. So that's kind of who I would like to see her be. I don't really know what kind of story they're telling with her, but if it gets her on TV and if she has an alliance with Alexa Bliss, who is, you know, one of the stars, like she is a star on Raw, then at least it gets Nikki on TV and that makes me happy. So I will take it at this point because my bar for Raw is very, very low and I just want to see her. At least she's around.
At least they're doing something with her. I mean, I do kind of like the idea of like maybe she like she's realized that she's mental, so she plays this like demure cam person to get what she wants and then unleashes it in the ring. Like I like
I
that
could, yeah.
idea. If that's
I
what they
like
if
that idea. I don't think that's how it came across. Like, I think it just came across as a disconnect. But if that's the story they want to tell with it, I'm all for it.
Yeah, hopefully that is the story they tell. With it. Money in the Bank is up on Sunday. Finn and I got a full card preview tomorrow, but I guess a couple of things I just wanted to talk to you about with Money in the Bank was Becky is Becky Two Belts. She's facing Lacey Evans for the Raw Women's title, Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's title. Has Becky lost a little bit of luster? And if so, why do you think that is?
She may have done. I think it's just because she hasn't really changed anything about herself in a little while. Like since WrestleMania, she's been the same. She's been Becky Two Belts. She's had her belts. She is still popular. She is still on top. But nothing has really changed or progressed in her story. And I think one of the problems is that she's facing Charlotte again at pay-per-view, and that feels like a story that we have just seen before. They did have an excellent video package on Raw about the history of Becky and Charlotte. Or was it on SmackDown? I can't remember. It might have been on both. I'm not sure. It all blends together at this point into one lump of boredom. But like they had a really excellent video package highlighting their history and their friendship and their breakup and, you know, now them being at each other's throats. And that was really well done, but it's just like we've seen it so many times. And Lacey Evans doesn't feel like a formidable foe to Becky Lynch. Like, I don't believe that Lacey Evans is going to beat Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's title. I don't think that Lacey Evans is at that point where I would believe that she would be the champion over Becky Lynch, right? So, I mean, maybe Becky's lost a little bit of luster, or maybe we've just gotten too used to her luster and it doesn't seem as shiny and something needs to progress and we need a new story. But I still think Becky's super popular. People are still chanting for her like crazy. They're still chanting Becky Two Belts. They still want to see her. So I don't think it's that she's, you know, horrible and ruined or anything like that. I think it's just that we've gotten used to seeing her on top now, and now we need a new wrinkle to the story.
So the also I wanted to ask you about the Money in the Bank ladder matches. The Money in the Bank ladder matches are obviously one for the men, one for the women. Who is your predicted winner, or who would you like to see win each one, and why?
I don't really care. The problem with Money in the Bank is I don't want it to be someone that I can't feasibly see as champion, right? So I think my picks for the women's one, I would love to see it be Ember Moon to give her some character development, to give her something to kind of cling to. But I think Bayley would actually be my choice. Like, I would love to see Bayley win Money in the Bank and then embrace this kind of like fire that she needs, because she's said that she's, you know, she left all of her hugs on Raw and she's on SmackDown now, and she's trying to prove herself and prove that she can be the champion that she knows she can be. And I think her having Money in the Bank could be very important to her character development. I also think it might be time for Bayley to not wear the side ponytail anymore, and that would break my heart in a lot of ways. But I think that if she's gonna try and embrace a new character direction, which she kind of needs at this point, then maybe that visual change would be helpful for her too. So yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Bayley as who I want to win. And for the men's one, Sami Zayn, because why not? Because he's in the Money in the Bank ladder match now for reasons. Because why not? Would have been kind of cool if we had qualifying matches like before the participants were announced and not after the participants were announced. I don't understand what's happening. Why is all of this happening?
I mean, why is it why are we not excited about the Money in the Bank ladder matches?
I love Money in the Bank normally. Like, I normally love Money in the Bank so much, and it bums me out that I don't care this year. Like, I keep forgetting that Money in the Bank is on Sunday, And then, like, asking for predictions and stuff, it's like, maybe it's because kind of similar to the discussion we had on Yellow Ropes Forever about NXT and just seeing heartbreak in everyone's future. I don't see the Money in the Bank ladder match winner being all that prestigious anymore. Not after Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin and, you know, Carmella cashing in on Charlotte and then having a title reign that we didn't really want her to have. So I'm not that excited about it. And it's a bummer because Money in the Bank should be super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Money in the Bank should be one of those matches, one of those events that we're super excited about, we're really into, and it just kind of feels a bit like, eh.
It's always been one of my favorite pay-per-views. The Money in the Bank ladder matches can be so good sometimes, right? Like they're a lot of fun, but I think it's just kind of everything feels like it's just circling in place and we're in kind of this purgatory in WWE. And I think part of what's hurt it is that one of the cool things about Money in the Bank ladder matches, it's like, oh, so we've had the SmackDown people face off and we've had the Raw people face off, and now like they're gonna all come together in this match and it's confrontations you don't normally see. And honestly, this whole wild card rule where everyone's just showing up on every show has like really damaged how much I care about watching the television show, because it just seems like we're seeing the same exact people every like two nights in a row, right? Like shows are opening with Roman Reigns and The Miz, and Roman Reigns and The Miz are not supposed to be on the same show. Why are they on the same show every week now? Like, I don't understand what's going on. I like the brand split because it gives more people an opportunity to get featured and it gives us more stories and unique stories. And like right now is just very frustrating. I haven't been this like down on WWE probably since, when was it that Sheamus was champion?
2015.
Yeah, because I stopped watching Raw for a while, like a good while, like a few months. And I'm
Till the
kind of at that.
lockbox.
Yes, till the lockbox. Oh, that's right. That is kind of what drew me back in, actually. The fucking lockbox. Oh, the memories. But yeah, like it seems like as I'm watching the show, nothing matters. Like even, you know, Kofi Kingston being champion is awesome and I was really happy for him, but like the end segment being Kofi Kingston trying to interview Kevin Owens backstage, like who could possibly care? Like it's hard for me to get invested in anyone right now.
Yeah, and it's I mean, I think the event itself should be good. The card should be pretty good. We've got Kofi Kingston, Kevin Owens, Becky and Charlotte, the two Money in the Bank matches, Seth and AJ should be really good.
Who do you think is going to win that one?
Seth and AJ?
Yeah.
Seth. I think Seth will retain.
Okay. I'm
But
terrified that AJ's going to win.
I mean, the thing is, I think a lot of it kind of feels. A lot of it feels samey, you know. I think it'll be a big test for Lacey Evans to see if she can go on a big stage, but a lot of it feels kind of samey. So there's
I
that.
saw someone online call Lacey Evans Golden Age Charlotte, and I can't get it out of my head.
Yeah, she kind of is. I mean, what else is there? Anything else? Oh, you wanted to talk a little bit about Shikara, something you are excited about.
Yes.
What's been happening? We need to watch a Shikara show for Patreon
Yes,
soon.
we do need to watch a Chikara show for Patreon. And so there was a Chikara show this past weekend, the Infinite Gauntlet, which is basically like Chikara's Royal Rumble. People enter every like 80 seconds or whatever. You can also be eliminated from the match by pinfall or submission, so it's a little bit more like Aztec Warfare from Lucha Underground. But Chikara's Infinite Gauntlet is one of the best pieces of wrestling storytelling that I have seen in years, because there were multiple stories going on in it. There's been a big story with Dasher Hatfield being the grand champion of Chikara. He's a baseball man, right? Like he wears a mask that's a baseball. And then Boomer Hatfield, who is his son, canonically, is kind of like a young upstart, like up and comer in Chikara. He's been doing really well for himself. He's been kind of the plucky underdog. And for the past long time, there's been a story going on between Dasher Hatfield and his step cousin-in-law, Mr. Touchdown, who's a football player. They just had a killer ladder match at the show in WrestleMania. Boomer Hatfield was front row, so he's like caught in the middle of this family drama, right? And Dasher Hatfield won, like retained the grand championship in the ladder match, broke everyone's hearts because that's what Chikara does. So in the Infinite Gauntlet, Boomer Hatfield comes out first. And then the whole story of the first half of the Infinite Gauntlet is Dasher Hatfield fighting Boomer Hatfield. And it's so good. And they'll work together to like eliminate everyone else who's in the match. Like they eliminate Danger Hawk right away, and they eliminate I forget who else was all in there, but like they eliminate everyone else, and then it gets to like there's all this father-son drama of them fighting each other, and Dasher's calling Boomer a disappointment and saying that, you know, like he doesn't deserve to be a Hatfield and he's just a constant disappointment to his father. And it's heartbreaking because Boomer Hatfield has always looked up to his father. He wanted to be a wrestler like his father, like he is trying to follow in his father's footsteps. And so when Dasher finally eliminates Boomer, it's like it's this heartbreaking situation, right? And like when Dasher finally gets eliminated by John Francis of Coronado, it's like this really triumphant thing. And it's just it's such a testament to being invested in the characters. And I know like most people listening to this aren't familiar with the people I'm talking about. But I mean, the whole story is father versus son, right? Like that's something that everyone can kind of get behind and you can understand the emotional drama there. And then, like, the second half of it has been really interesting because they, like, Chikara has a history of naming their jobbers things like Armbreaker Amir and Fireman's Carrie Fry and Jawbreaker Joe Sue and Waistlock Wayne and Hip Toss Hank and all of these, like, really generic jobber names that you know that if that person comes out, they are going to be losing a match. It's just to highlight another person on the roster, right? And this is the first year that in the Infinite Gauntlet, a lot of these characters are involved. So you see like Enziguri Evan come out and you just kind of don't expect much from him. And then he kills it. Like he does like really, really cool stuff in the Infinite Gauntlet and everyone's paying attention to these jobbers. And they're kind of all like banding together and using friendship to the point where they're eliminating everyone. And it's really cool. It would be like, I'm trying to think of an example in WWE. It would be like if the Colognes and Apollo Crews and like Dana Brooke and, you know, people like that were entering the Royal Rumble and then eliminating people and then winning, right? But even less so because like they don't have name recognition. They're just faceless because they wear masks and everything too. And so they all band together. They end up eliminating everyone. And then in the end, you find out that like Ophidian, who's one of my very favorite wrestlers in Chikara, just enters the Infinite Gauntlet after everybody else has been eliminated. He is the last person to enter and everyone else is out. So he just wins. He just walks in and wins. And then what they've been doing is airing these really cool videos after Beyond Wrestling's Uncharted Territory and kind of just like popping up on the internet. There have been these videos of like an underground fight club happening in Chikara where the jobbers are getting trained and they put them in masks to kind of like train them and start them in the system and all this kind of stuff. But it's underground. It's like after hours and it's really gritty. And you see like a hooded figure who's definitely Ophidian. Like it's definitely Ophidian's voice. He's not wearing his mask. Like he just has a hood over his face, but it's like Ophidian is the leader of this underground fight club that you only see if you know, watch these videos after the shows and, you know, it really gets people talking. And so it's just like, it's been such a really cool moment of storytelling in Chikara right now. And comparing that to WWE, where I'm just like, some of my favorite performers, like I'm seeing Andrade Cien Almas and Mustafa Ali and Finn Balor all in a match. I mean, Randy Orton was there too, but nothing's perfect. But like I'm seeing those three guys in a match and I'm not caring. And then I'm watching, you know, Enziguri Evan and Jawbreaker Joe Sue in the Infinite Gauntlet. And I'm like, out of my seat getting excited about it, right? And so it's just a testament to character and storytelling, and like I can't wait to see where this goes. So I just wanted to give Chikara a little bit of love and encourage people to check it out because it's really, really good.
Where can people check it out if they want to check Chikara out?
Okay, so the best place to go is Independent Wrestling TV. I think it's independentwrestling.tv is the subscription service that you can watch it on. There's also Chikaratopia, but Independent Wrestling TV has so much available. Because they have all the shows from Chikara, they have all the shows from Beyond, they have Demand Lucha on there, they have Bizarro Lucha on there, they have St. Louis Anarchy is streamed on Independent Wrestling TV as well. So I think it's independentwrestling.tv, and there are actually promo codes where you can sign up for 20 days free, like if you use Uncharted or Black Label, or I think Chikara works too, to sign up for a free 20-day trial. And like, I don't know, I really encourage people to check it out and get in touch with me if you need suggestions of stuff to watch, because I'm kind of all about spreading the independent wrestling love right now, especially because I'm kind of disillusioned with WWE. And like, I'm really excited about like the world of wrestling as a whole. So even if WWE is kind of pants right now, like there's so much good stuff out there.
Well, and the good thing is with the AEW deal, which we could have talked about at the beginning, with that coming in, it is the closest chance that there is to WWE getting a kick up their arse and doing something. So
yeah,
that is good as well. Well, listen, let's just finish it off with a good old Shag Marry Kill for you, Sandra.
Okay.
Okay, who are we going to give you? Let's give you current day, the Nature Boy Ric Flair.
The one in hospital?
No, he's out. He's okay. He's all good. No, no, judge. Well, not that's the case. We'll cut that off. Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Randy Orton.
Oh man. I would. This is difficult. This is really difficult. I think I would marry Triple H so that the NXT Empire can be mine.
Good hairline as well.
Good hairline as well. I think I would like hate fuck Randy Orton and kill Vince McMahon.
I mean, we all know you secretly want to hate fuck Randy Orton, so at least it's out in the open now.
I didn't say I wanted to. These are the options I was given.
She doth not protest. What are your plugs, Sandra? What are the plugs you're going to give us?
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, for tons of bonus content. We are going to be recording a Chikara podcast, especially because I'm super excited to talk about it right now. That's going to be happening soon. We're going to be covering Money in the Bank. We'll see how excited we are about Money in the Bank on Monday. But yeah, tons of bonus content going up on Patreon all the time. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. There's a really cool interview that I really enjoyed with Dustin Rhodes. It's just a quick, like, couple minute thing, but he talks about the Cody Dustin WrestleMania match that they wanted to have and how he was disappointed that it didn't happen. And so now it's kind of cool that, I mean, Double or Nothing isn't WrestleMania, but it's still a pretty big stage, and I'm really happy that they're getting that chance. So youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for all of that, and go to insidetheropes.co.uk/BookerT for tickets to An Evening with Booker T.
I think you've covered it all. Who should play as it? Give us a theme tune.
I think we should play. I always want to play Bray Wyatt's theme tune, but we play it so often. He is the best thing in WWE right now. Let's play, I don't know, one of the songs from Being the Elite or something like that. Some sort of AEW related
You know
theme
what?
tune.
Why don't we just play the Firefly Funhouse song?
I actually have the Firefly Funhouse song like edited into Bray Wyatt's theme if you want me to send that to you.
Sure, we'll do that. Here's Firefly Funhouse taking us into Bray Wyatt, which is everything we need in our lives. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please do sign up to Patreon. It really helps us out and be able to keep doing all the stuff that we do. Tickets to Booker T and all the usual jazz that Sondra had mentioned. We'll be back over the weekend with Retro Raw and Money in the Bank on Monday. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Really glad that you're our friend, and this is a friendship that